The Offside Rule, We Get It, is brought to you by Continental Tires.
Hello, this is the Offside Rule, We Get It podcast. And today we're recording on International Women's Day from Wembley, all part of an event put on by women in football. I'm joined by Kate Borsay, and you're my regular partner today. Regular partner anyway.
Yeah, we've had a brilliant day so far here today, and you can probably hear it all still rumbling on in the background. The great thing about these events is not only have we had a Google Hangout, we've been hearing from Eni Aluko and Leanne Sanderson, Kim Little and some of the international women who are in action at the moment over in the Cyprus Cup. But we're also, of course, getting the chance to network and meet other inspiring, powerful women who work in football.
We want to celebrate that, so we're doing something slightly different. So the regular voices you're going to hear are myself, Lindsay Hooper, Kate Borsay, we just heard from, and then we're going to have a guest hot seat, influential women in football, to join us on each topic. We've not done this before, have we?
The female take on football.
This is what we're going to talk about then. We're going to talk about Women's Super League as topic two. The Women's Super League is going to be starting very soon, and we're going to talk about the teams in WSL 1 that we think will qualify for Europe. There's Champions League spaces up for grabs. The top two spots will go and qualify for Europe. So let's talk about that with somebody. We've got a very special guest coming up to talk with us about that. Influential women in football as well. That's going to be our final topic. We're going to divide it because there are some influential women in football and we take a serious look at things, and we're also going to take the more obscure, because sometimes there's women making influences without even us even knowing about it. And I know that Anna Kessel, who's joining us for that chat, has got a really good one. But we're going to start with Premier League, because 10 games to go now in the Premier League season. It's all hotting up. And I know that we talked about our predictions, Kate, earlier on in the season about who we thought were going to finish where. I don't want us to repeat too much on that. But with 10 games to go, I think it's important for us to look at the form book, look at which teams are doing well right now, and the run-in till the end of the season.
We can't deny that there have been a few upsets. It isn't like it's all gone clockwork for all the top teams since we last spoke about this in January, so it'd be exciting to see if our opinions differ. And of course, we've got a different opinion to throw into the mix as well today.
So we'll get our first guest into a hot seat, and I'm going to call her over. This is actually a familiar voice to the podcast, because she's guest hosted with us once before, but hot from being amongst the trouble, unfortunately, at Aston Villa. We're going to have to ask you about that. Carrie Brown joins us, who's a broadcaster and reporter for beIN Sport. Carrie, first of all, tell us about where you've come from, because yesterday you were at the FA Cup game, weren't you?
I was. It's a derby. It's a late kickoff. Question about whether that was the wisest thing. They did have a police presence. They did have stewards, but stewards in front of West Brom fans rather than in front of Villa. And I haven't seen this in a long time. Enough fans on the pitch before the final whistle. It's just idiocies. There were other Villa fans just shouting, "Why are you ruining this for us?" And that's really the big question. And then also spoke to both managers after, neither condoned that, but also spoke to Fabien, who really interestingly was trying to make light of it, but was really shaken up. He had his captain's armband taken off him. He thought fans were going to kiss him. They started nibbling his neck and biting at him. Come on, Villa fans, it's a bit strange. That's taking hero worship a little fast, mob mentality, but not being as reported as much, or maybe caught on camera as much, with the seats being thrown down from West Brom end onto the Villa fans. Saw one with a big head injury having to be treated in the tunnel. Another guy have been led off by his grandfather, who'd been hit in the head. If it had been his grandfather, dread to think how he would have struggled with that shot. Yeah. So I know it's a local derby, lads, but there will be repercussions from that. And I like Tony Pulis coming out and literally saying, I don't care which club they think they represent, ban them. Ripping out seats, throwing them down, violence, out of the game, please.
Aston Villa may feature in this because, of course, they're in trouble when it comes to Premier League. That's FA Cup and they're doing well there. But when you look at their domestic form, it's not been so hot. What I want us to look at is the top four places in the Premier League. So we're looking at Champions League and also at the bottom of the table as well, who's going to get relegated. So in terms of form and running, let's have a look at a couple of teams that we think are going to do well and ones that maybe will slip up.
Well, I'm sure we probably all agree that Manchester City and Chelsea are red-hot favourites, absolutely fine to kind of stay in those positions. And I think that with a game in hand, Manchester City behind them as well, I don't see anyone threatening those two places. The big conversation, as far as I'm concerned, is who's going to get those last two remaining Champions League berths. And, of course, we've got really three contenders. OK, you could look at Southampton, you could look at Spurs, but they're both wavering a little bit, and I'm not confident that they're going to put in a great, you know, end of season run. So really we're looking at, aren't we, Arsenal, Manchester United and Liverpool, and who we think from those three teams is going to do the job. In terms of the top of the Premier League, can we get as exciting as last season when the league leaders changed 25 times? And in fact, Manchester City only spent 15 days at the top of the Premier League last season, but they ended up clinching it. I don't think we'll have that kind of drama again when it comes to the top of the table. But yeah, I'm going to give my punts quickly before I hand over and we'll open the discussion up a little bit. I'm going Arsenal for me. Why on earth would they upset what they've done for the last 17 years? Wenger's a mastermind at gaining this Champions League place, at making sure that he establishes that. Aaron Ramsey's coming back. Possibly Jack Wilshere will be back before the end of the season as well. With those two players on side, I can't see them slipping up. In terms of United and Liverpool, and that's the main argument for me, Manchester United or Liverpool. Of course I'm going to go with Liverpool. I'm a Liverpool fan, but there's a good reason. Manchester United, how long can they continue playing badly and picking up results? The flip side to that is, will they start playing well in these final last 10 games of the season? Let's look at Liverpool. Brendan Rodgers has that team playing brilliantly, but they're still poor defensively. How long can they carry on getting results with a poor defence? For me, I've gone Liverpool because I just think that they're going to carry on that good run of form. Brendan Rodgers is a great manager, as is Louis van Gaal as well, but I think it comes down to a battle of the managers, and for me, Rodgers is going to win that battle with his team already in form and flying as we go into the final 10.
Interesting you point that out, because Manchester United, I'm going to sort of weigh in before we hand over to Carrie for hers, they've actually got five of the current top seven teams, haven't they, to go?
It is remarkable. They literally, of course, the FA Cup match, but then it's Manchester United, Arsenal, Manchester United, Tottenham, Liverpool, Manchester United, Aston Villa, bit of a respite maybe, then Manchester United, Manchester City. It's boom or bust for me. They're either going to go there. two big games. They've got the FA Cup match at home to Arsenal. They've got Manchester United, Tottenham. That two big home games, two big wins at Old Trafford could set them on the way, or it's going to be complete implosion.
And do you want to break the news as well to Kate Borsay that Liverpool's running? Liverpool's running isn't much easier, is it?
No, and that's really tough. And I think with Liverpool, I go on theory of depth of squad. And I know they've really struggled without Sturridge. It's really coming and being a boost. Coutinho's really come on. Really exciting signs for Liverpool. I just think if injury, though, could really destabilise them. Arsenal, I agree with you, Kate, very much. Of course they'll do it again. And I'm not going to rule out Tottenham.
Oh, okay.
Neither am I. I'm with you.
Harry Kane, come on. I mean, it's ridiculous. And people still saying, is it a bit of a blip? We could never see him again. I don't think this is the sort of talent that's a blip and he's going to vanish into obscurity. He's given them a huge amount of confidence. He wins matches for them time and time again. Hugo Lloris, they have a world-class goalkeeper. I think they just could. So if there's implosions at Manchester United, if Liverpool suffer an injury, it's still very close there.
I'm going to say that I'm not ruling Southampton out.
Ooh.
Southampton have perhaps the better running of most of those vying to get into Champions League spaces.
I think I'm right, though. The only reason I wasn't going to edge in Southampton there, because I would like them and I think they could do it with their running, is I think their last game of the season is Manchester City at Manchester City, isn't it?
Yes, that is true. And all of the games are going to count now, aren't they? There's a part of me that really wants Southampton to do it. I will root for the underdog. Let's look at the bottom of the table. So I'm going to pitch in here with Hull and Crystal Palace, because obviously at the moment they're both in the thick of the relegation battle, but both had changes and aren't in the bottom three as we record this podcast. They both have horrible looking run-ins, though, so I think out of Hull and Crystal Palace, one of those might face some trouble. Leicester, the amount of people that I've spoken to that have said, don't write Leicester off. A few journos around different football grounds when I've been reporting at Premier League games have said Leicester have been one of the better sides in that bottom eight that we've watched. They've got the quality to stay up, if you believe. We'll have to see. But in terms of who you think might pop it, who do you think?
Well, do you remember in the last podcast in January, I said Aston Villa would go unless they had a change of manager, and you had a massive pop at me and started laying into me in your usual way about, oh yes, you can't have that caveat, but lo and behold, Aston Villa have changed their manager. Just call me Mystic Meg. So the chances of them staying in the Premier League, yes, they're better, but I'm still really, really concerned, and I don't think what happened at the weekend was a great display of why they should stay in the Premier League. But I am still concerned about Leicester. I had Burnley to survive the last time we spoke about this. I am a little bit more worried about Burnley now. Queen's Park Rangers, I just think they're up and down there all over the place, and I'm not confident that they're going to do it. Sunderland, I had to go down.
Yes, we all did, didn't we?
Yeah, and I'm not still convinced about them either. So at the moment, I would probably go with Leicester, Burnley and Sunderland.
I'm potentially putting Hull with Sunderland and Burnley to go down. I don't think Burnley will do it. But Burnley, QPR, it could be Burnley, QPR, Sunderland, Burnley, QPR, Hull. One of those combinations. West Brom, by the way, to add insult to injury off the back of the game that you've just got back from, Carrie. They've apparently got the toughest. If you look at all of the fixtures and if you look at all the averages that people get, West Brom have got the worst run in.
They have, and from what I saw, I'm sorry, of both Aston Villa and West Brom, it's very clear they're in the position they are. I know what Tony Pulis can do in terms of defence. That might be the only thing that saves them. Tim Sherwood has a lot of work to do. Like the guy a lot, like the confidence he's given them, but I'm not sure they are good enough to stay up. It's going to be tough for them with their run-in. I'm sorry, Burnley, I'm sorry, Leicester, but I think writing's on the wall. I have seen too many good performances from QPR in which they haven't got results and they've been up against big teams that I think they might surprise everyone and stay up. They have a lot of quality on that field. They have a quality and a cohesion on teams that I don't see from that relegation group. They keep on not getting results, but they keep on putting on quality performances. Maybe that will just finally tell.
Okay, thank you very much. It's time to get that hot seat going hot. Thank you very much for joining us, Carrie.
Absolute pleasure.
Right, we're going to welcome in another guest. And this time we've got Francesca Brown, who runs Goals for Girls. And she's going to talk about WSL.
Check out exclusive football content daily on offsiderulepodcast.com.
So we've managed to get Francesca to come and join us. Francesca Brown, so just explain to us a little bit about your role, because you've actually founded Goals for Girls.
Yeah, Goals for Girls. I used to play for the under-16 Manchester City lot, and I realised that when I wanted to go to America, there was no pathway after, unfortunately, I had a groin injury. There was no pathway for me to take on from there. So I decided to, when I moved to London at the tender age of 18, I decided to start running my own football coaching campus, shall I say, within schools, and it just develops from there, really. The girls were really interested. They were ecstatic that they had a female coach. So what I just started doing was I thought there was a brilliant niche here for the young girls. So I founded my own development centre, and it's a development programme which develops the young girls with mentoring. We do inspirational speaking, we do trips. A lot of these girls have not even been outside of London. And we do educational programs and qualifications alongside football training, which builds their confidence, self-esteem, and everything like that. So, yeah.
So joining us for a WSL chat is pretty good, because you may even be producing or crossing paths with some of the girls that will be playing in that league in the future.
Yeah, definitely. I've got an amazing girl at the moment. She just got signed to Leighton Orient. And seriously, she's a star to watch out for. Definitely.
What's her name?
Aisha Jabi.
Okay, we'll look out for that name going forward in WSL seasons. We are going to focus, because we're focusing on the top. We've just done topic one with Carrie Brown, and we were talking about Premier League. So we're going to talk about the Women's Super League, and we're going to talk about WSL 1 and focus our efforts there. So going into a brand new season, which is about to start, we've obviously got the Women's World Cup as well, which is this summer, which is going to break things up slightly. All of these things, by the way, have a factor to play. But the top two sides will qualify for Champions League. We've seen Birmingham go on a really great run in Champions League recently, and Arsenal, of course, have got many honours to their name. But who do we think are going to be there this year? So should we start with our guest, Kate?
Yes, why not?
Okay, so Francesca, you're the top two finishers. Who do you think it will be?
I definitely think at the moment Arsenal and Chelsea.
You're going for both London clubs. Why are you going for these?
Well, Arsenal, I just think they're a well-represented women's club within England. And as for Chelsea, I like Maya Luka. So.
You're a bit of a fan of Eni, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm a major fan of her. I love her. I love her beliefs and her values around women in sport. And I just think that she is basically a force to be reckoned with.
I agree with you, but maybe one player can't win the WSL. I'll just put that back to you. We'll talk about signings then, key signings that we think could make a difference. I'm going to start by talking about Arsenal, because Arsenal won everything for years and years and years. They had what would be perceived to be perhaps a couple of rocky seasons for their standards over the last two seasons. Are they going to end up winning more? Are they going to end up being WSL 1 winners and preventing Liverpool from doing the treble, because Liverpool are on for a hat-trick of WSL titles? I think they've got all the ingredients here to start it off, because not only have they got a new boss, they've got new signings as well. Pedro Martinez is the new Arsenal ladies boss, if people weren't aware of that. Four new signings that he's brought in, which I think are really going to be key. One which I'm going to let you expand on, Francesca, because I know it's Leanne Sanderson who you want to talk about, but she's gone from Boston Breakers. There's Gemma Rose from Bristol City, Natalia, who's a Spanish striker who's been brilliant down in Bristol, but the one that I'm really excited about, Vicky Lasada from Barcelona. I think that could be one of the key signings of the season, and I think that Arsenal will finish in the top two, but I will tell you where I think they will finish in terms of one or two in a second. Kate?
Okay, well, a couple of key signings for me, first of all. I don't think Liverpool will go and do it for a third consecutive season. They were lucky last season, weren't they? And Chelsea desperately unlucky. So I've plumped for Chelsea to win the league this time. I just think they've got talent there, which is still on a mission. When we spoke to Winnie, in fact, I spoke to Winnie before the start of last season, she said, you know, there's a lot going on at the club. They made quite a few key signings, and their ambition was very much to take the league by the scruff of the neck and do it. And they nearly did it last year. So let's not be mistaken about the fact that Chelsea are still on a mission, and they are still hungry. Having gone so close last season, they're going to want to finish the job off. Enny Aluko, of course, very much the linchpin of the Chelsea side. They've also signed Gemma Davison as well. I know that the podcast was down at the Chelsea training ground yesterday, so you can have a little look at the website, offsiderulepodcast.com, for our report on that training. Jen Offord went for us to report in on what the Chelsea leaders are up to, but I very much fancy them for the WSL title. Arsenal, it is a rejuvenated Arsenal, new manager, new players, lots of good talent coming in. Boy, did they flounder at the start of last season, and they will never repeat that again. That was a big warning sign. Of course, the manager changed, left Shelley, left to go up to Scotland. And for them, it's about re-establishing their authority within this league. But I still think Chelsea are going to do it.
So you're going Chelsea first, Arsenal second. I think I'm with you, actually. I think Notts County and Liverpool will be up there fighting. Yeah. But how about you then?
I'm sticking with my guns, Arsenal then Chelsea.
You're going the other way around.
Yes,
so you're going.
I am. Yes, I am.
And tell us why Leanne Sanderson's one of your favourite players.
I just think she's just such a down-to-earth girl. She's just such an inspiration for all the young women out there. She's so bubbly as well.
Very recognisable.
Yes, very recognisable. And she's a woman who a lot of young women can relate with. Even though I work in East London, a lot of the girls relate with her, of how she found it challenging to get into football, and she started at a young age and she has to work her way up, and she had the influences of boys saying, oh, you can't do this, and people watching her. She just fought through it, and I just think that's just amazing, an amazing inspiration for young women out there.
A key player that I want to mention quickly is the first player from Africa to compete in the Women's Super League, and that's with the arrival of the Nigerian signing Asisat Oshiola to Liverpool. Great signing for Matt Beard and the team there. She won the Golden Boots and the Golden Ball as player of the tournament at last year's Under 20 World Cup finals, and of course she's going to be not only setting her sights on tearing up Merseyside, but she'll also of course have this fantastic standing and this responsibility on her shoulders that someone from the African game has actually come over to the WSL. So I think that's going to be hugely important. Matt Beard said of her, of course, if you want to know what she's like, she's not the finished article, but she's got pace, power, and she certainly knows where the goal is. So I think she'll be pretty exciting.
Francesca, thank you for joining us for topic two. Can you also give us a quick plug for your website and what you do?
So you can follow me on www.twitter.com/goalsforgirlsuk, or you can follow obviously all our images and what the girls have been up to on instagram.com/goalsforgirls.
Keep up the good work. You're one of our inspirational women on International Women's Day. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Well, before we move on to topic number three, we're going to be joined by Anna Kessel, who's a journalist for both The Observer and The Guardian, but also the co-founder of Women in Football. So we'll talk to her shortly. We're going to go over for Twitter topic of the week. Would you like to give Sean his intro this week?
This week, we've challenged you all to give us an inspirational woman in football. So you've dished out the role models, and let's find out who you've put up for the award.
Twitter topic of the week.
As it is an International Women's Day special, we've been asking you for your inspirational women in football for Twitter Topic of the Week this week. Kieran's been on and said that we're going to struggle to fit this into 30 minutes. You're spot on with that, Kieran. We have struggled. Too much to talk about. We've got Natasha, who's suggested all of the ladies of the Bendit musical. I'm guessing that's the Bendit like Beckham. Just a Ball Game has gone for our Just a Ball Game patron, Andy Worrell. Jill Coulthard's thrown in Linda Whitehead into the mix. Eleanor Preston's gone for Patricia Gregory. Harriet Drudge has gone for the Women in Football Board for their amazing work breaking down barriers for women in the game. Hashtag she belongs. Richard Hobbs has gone for Jackie Oatley, and he says that she's been a pioneer for females in football broadcasting. Craig Keefe has gone for Shan Massey, who says that she's an amazing official and spotted every offside, although does say that he hasn't seen her officiate lately. George Rinaldi's also gone for Jackie Oatley. Kelly Wells has gone for Amy Lawrence, saying she's a great writer, original point of view, and puts up with Claridge's nonsense like a pro. And who is keeping score has gone for their cousin Carol, who's been an underage international 10 years ago, and she made her first senior start for Ireland yesterday. Cheers to everyone who got in touch for Twitter Topic of the Week this week. I've been Sean, and I will hand you back to the girls.
Thank you very much, Sean. We're going to stick with that inspirational women theme. We've got influential women on the podcast today, and joining us next is Anna Kessel. Anna, I don't even know where to begin, because you've written about football and you've been a very influential journalist in your time, but also women in football. It's got on a huge tirade at the moment with a few campaigns. So where do you want to begin?
I love that word, tirade. Some people might think we're on a tirade. We launched the campaign last week about sexist abuse on match days, which was something that was not at all on the football agenda, quite surprisingly. And, you know, footage has emerged of really offensive chanting, and hopefully this is now going to change football's attitude about sexism and the discrimination that women face.
It's so important as well. I think one of the examples that was given as you held the event here at Wembley today was about the back of the FA Cup and League Cup tickets, that there are instructions for people who are in the crowd about what might happen if you are caught doing racist chanting or abusive chanting, but there was nothing to do with sexism in there.
Yeah, I mean, this is the really funny thing. Everybody says, oh, sexism, oh, you can't possibly change that about football. You know, it's just part of football, it's banter. Well, actually, there's already all this legislation and all these reporting lines that are set up for every other form of discrimination. It's not that difficult. You just put the word sexism on the ticket or on the poster or on, you know, in your educational training programmes. It just slots in alongside everything else.
I think we've probably all encountered a fair bit of sexism, whether we've been reporting on the game or we've been at a press conference, whatever. And I think, you know, my sort of number one irk is, and I've been lucky to never have been surrounded by a chance or kind of anything openly antagonistic, but what I would say is that when I've dressed up before to go to the football, if I've been invited to perhaps go in up to the chairman's office or room, or perhaps I've been invited there by a member of the board or something, if I've dressed up because I've had to go to the football, I'm often just called a footballer's wife, you know.
Yeah, or a wag. We've had that together, haven't we?
Yeah, fans will walk past and go, oh, well, she must be a wag, particularly at Chelsea, but I have to say.
Really? I want to throw into Anna as well as a journalist, because you were one of the, not the first, because obviously you're not that old, but certainly one of the first talked about, I would add on to the end of that. I think you got quite a lot of press yourself off the back of some of the articles that you'd written. How did you find that, and what were the responses like to some of the papers?
That's quite an interesting question, actually. I think, you know, when I started 10 years ago, there already were pioneers like Julie Welsh, and Amy Lawrence was on my paper. So I felt like, oh, it should be quite an easy trajectory. They've already done it. And then I was quite surprised that I'd go into the press box and I would be the only woman, and there might be some smutty comments, or someone would mistake me for a wag or whatever it was. One of my friends actually got mistaken for a tea lady at a match. She was holding a laptop, and one of the journalists came over and said, oh, we really hate the cakes this week. Can you make sure that they're better? And she was like, what tea lady has a laptop? But you know, all that kind of stuff. And the, if you get a really great story, then, oh, how did you get that story? Did you flirt your way through the interview? You know, absolute rubbish. So yeah, been there, done it, got the t-shirt.
Well, let's celebrate the fact that we have made strides forward. I know that there's still a lot for us that can be done. We'll mention that She Belongs is the hashtag that you're wanting people to use to highlight women who work in the game and who belong in the game. And also just give one final plug as well to the campaign that's going on.
Yes, so that's hashtag Shame on the Game, which obviously isn't that popular in some quarters, but we really feel it's important to shine a light on sexist abuse. And we want to give women the confidence and men to come forward and acknowledge that it is wrong. And it's only by reporting it that things are going to change.
So coming back to the positive strides we've made, we've got some really influential women who work in football now. And what I've asked each of you to do, I've tasked you with choosing one and bringing someone to the table. Obviously, there are so many we could have mentioned, so we do apologise that we've had to feather this down. But it is only a short podcast, so that's why. We'll go with one each, and we'll also talk about women in football that might have had an influence we're not so aware of. It might be a story that you've heard or an own personal experience. Starting with our guest, Anna.
So Inspirational Women of the Week is absolutely, for me, got to be BBC sports journalist Natalie Perks, who of course, you know, did this whole investigative report into sexist chanting. She was the one who uncovered the horrific abuse at Old Trafford. You know, a great report in itself, but actually the backstory of it is even more impressive, I think. She had to go to her bosses, and remember, this is the BBC, so really, really strict editorial guidelines on what you can and can't do. There were no reports of sexist chants on match days last season, not one, and she had to convince them that this was a problem and get them to invest time in it and effort. The fact that she managed to do that, she worked on it for weeks and weeks, I think is extraordinary. And, you know, as you can all see, the result has been that the whole nation, actually the whole world, has been talking about her story. It went as far as New Zealand.
That's brilliant. I felt that in particular the highlighting of what's been happening to the Chelsea team doctor, some of the chants that they managed to... I couldn't believe actually there was footage of that and the fact that nothing was done about it there and then.
It is extraordinary. I know that we've met Eva before and heard a little bit about it behind closed doors, but I'm glad that it's come into the press and I'm glad that it's got an airing.
Who is your influential woman?
I've actually gone with someone who Anna has interviewed in the past, and I decided to look up this lady because our own Harriet Drudge was at the first ever FIFA Women's Football in Leadership conference last week. She was telling me about the inspirational panel of speakers there, one of whom is Aisha Johansson. She's the president of the Sierra Leone Football Association, one of only two female FA presidents in the world. And I know that you interviewed her as well, Anna, but she, in her article with you, what kind of jumped out to me was the battle she had to become president of the Sierra Leone FA, which even got physical at one point, but also her fight in trying to get the country to take Ebola seriously, and the fact that she was incredibly alarmed about it from early on, but it was very much, no, everything's going to be okay. Of course, it wasn't okay, and the league ended up getting suspended for a certain period of time, and of course it did get serious. But for me, she appears to be in very determined lady, fierce about not signing up to the barriers involved in football, and particularly within the African game as well. And her zero tolerance on corruption, which we've heard about in some African countries, is one to be applauded. I think also the fact that she's president of an FA in a country that's been through a long civil war. So all sorts of challenges thrown at her. Just tell me what she was like to talk to.
She was amazing. I mean, not only what she's done in her football career, but even before then, she started out as a journalist and she launched this magazine, I think 20, 30 years ago. And the first ever issue of it dealt with homosexuality in Africa, which you can imagine at that time was a huge taboo. She was struggling just to scrape the money together to pull off this magazine. She and Kanya King, who founded the Mobos, shared literally a table in Euston to try and launch this thing. And you can see how far both women have come since. It's quite incredible. But she told me stories about, you know, as president, she's had journalists go on the national radio and call her a prostitute. All sorts of horrific things. And in fact, even after I'd written the article, I then got roundly abused on Twitter by various people in Sierra Leone for, you know, speaking to her in the first place and writing about her. And they said, oh, there's you know, this is all nonsense. There's no problem with sexism in Sierra Leone or any part of African football. It was all quite absurd.
I'm going to go with the only female board member on the FA, which is Heather Rabatz. I know that she obviously gets a lot of press in the UK. Also, she holds a role, doesn't she, at Millwall? She's executive deputy chair for Millwall Football Club. And I think the reason why I'm highlighting her as a completely influential woman, apart from the absolutely blindingly obvious that she's the only female on the FA board, the other thing that I really want to mention about her is the fact that she's challenging things. in that position? Because it would be very easy, wouldn't it, to be in that position and sit on that board and not actually do what we're wanting you to do. As females who work in football, we want certain things answered. And one of the things that I thought was really important that she did recently, and I think Greg Dyke is under sort of pressure and scrutiny as a result of it, is she spoke out about the fact that this all-male commission was put together and it was set up all white, all male. There was no minorities covered. There weren't any females on that commission either. And I think it was really important that at that point she spoke out in the position that she's in, and I think she holds a lot of weight. I think she was also someone that people went to, and there was the whole Ched Evans case, and she spoke very well and eloquently about that as well. And as a really influential person going forward, I think she is going to have a real influence when it comes to what we achieve on the pitch in women's football, off the pitch, as journalists, as people who appreciate, as fans of the men's and women's game. So I think there's a lot resting on her shoulders, but I think she's doing an admirable job.
I'm Gary Neville and you're listening to The Offside Rule.
So we don't like to end our podcast on a very serious note. I don't know whether you've picked up on that, Anna. Yeah. Kate, yours first.
Mine isn't particularly funny, so it's a good job that you came to me first. But I just wanted to recognise the mums, the single mums who ferry their footballing stars around. These, of course, are the young kids who come on to become stars of the future, whether in the Premier League or the Women's Premier League. And I've picked out a couple of Women's Premier League players whose mums have done a fine job in investing their time in and their trust in their daughter's career, because of course when both these players, it's Jess Clark and Tash Harding, were youngsters, the women's game wasn't semi-professional, it wasn't as established as it is now, so they were taking a real leap of faith, I guess, investing so much time in their daughters. And they didn't do it, of course, because they wanted something back. They did it because it made their daughters happy and they recognised how important it was. No big flashy Premier League clubs here, you know, these are mums who were taking a punt on their daughters and investing great time in them. So I want to give a shout to Tash Harding. She's now, of course, just about to go to America, isn't she, to go and play for Washington Spirit, and Notts County's Jess Clark's mum, both single mums. In fact, Jess's mum worked night shifts, so she had to try and negotiate getting home from football late at night whilst her mum was at work, and all the other issues that involved. But yeah, two single mums there really doing it for their daughters in sport.
I think we should do an honorary female. So you know how you go to some awards and people are honoured? I think we should make John Terry, give him a skirt for an evening and give him an award. Okay. Because you know that he saved Chelsea Ladies Football Club.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
You don't have much more to say on that, do you? No, she doesn't. She doesn't like him either. I know that we all sit here as women and think there's some things that he's conducted himself, but he's done his own little bit there for Chelsea Ladies. And if they go on, as we were predicting earlier, to win the WSL 1... he'll have a big part to have played in that.
I hope he's not going to pop up in the trophy award winning picture, because that would be hilarious.
He probably will. There you go, you got some comedy. Anna Kessel.
So on a more serious note, one of the women that I want to celebrate is probably more traditionally known as a wag, but she's turned out to be the main breadwinner in her family through sort of changing in circumstance. So Fabrice Mwamba's wife, Shauna Mwamba, she started out life having a master's degree, married Fabrice, became a wag, didn't quite fit the bill because she's far too intelligent to, you know, just spend her days shopping. Anyway, Fabrice used to come home and complain about the food at Bolton. And she was an amazing cook. She's born in Jamaica. And she started making him a bit of jerk chicken, a bit of curry goat. And he would take it to training. And sure enough, his teammates started to ask, "Where did you get that food from? Can I have some?" So she started cooking for more and more of the team. Word got round. Next thing, she was catering for like Rio Ferdinand and Ashley Young and all sorts of people. Of course, as we know, Fabrice Mwamba's life then changed radically. He had a cardiac arrest, famously, at White Hart Lane. And because of how it changed his footballing career, you know, it completely affected the family's finances. And all of a sudden, Shauna began to grow into the role of breadwinner. She used all her intelligence, all her business nous, and she produced this range of sauces called Mrs. Mwamba's. She drove it forward. There was Fabrice, you know, still struggling, recovering. It was a very slow process. It affected him, his memory quite radically, and affected how much he could do. Of course, he learnt he could no longer be a footballer, which was a really tragic sort of adjustment for him to make. In the meantime, she grew her sauces range, got it out to all the supermarkets, and now she is, you know, the business success story of the family. So she is my woman to celebrate today.
One more from me worth a mention, I think, is that Delia Smith, as we know from Norwich City, is a figure and a female we associate with football. And I think she is flying the flag right now. Because this is great. Waitrose. You can imagine Waitrose choosing a face of their magazine and to endorse products. And they had Pippa Middleton. But guess what, Pippa Middleton? What follows Pippa's arse? Delia Smith. That's what follows. They've actually dropped Pippa Middleton for Delia Smith. Obviously, it's for her cooking credentials rather than anything else. But as being a leading lady and figure in football, I think every time I go to Waitrose now, I'll think of football.
I have to say, I've met Delia a few times, and she is really passionate about the team. And she will talk to you a lot about the team.
In Waitrose?
I met her at Norwich City, and I had the really embarrassing thing of I'd met her once, and then I met her again. But she clearly thought that we were maybe much better friends than we were, because the second time I met her, she ran up to me and gave me like a massive bear hug, and she was like, how are you, sweetie, like this, and I was like, okay, I don't know you that well, hi Delia. It was really bizarre, but yeah, she does actually, you know, genuinely have a passion for her team, so fair play.
Well, that is it for our special on International Women's Day. Thank you very much for joining us, Anna, the last person in that hot seat. Is it hot?
It's very hot.
It's horrible, isn't it, when you sit down and there's a warm seat? Thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back next week. We hope you enjoy this one as an International Women's Special. Thank you very much for listening to this one, an International Women's Day Special. And make sure you go to our website, offsiderulepodcast.com, where we've got many more articles on there. Some of them include women, some of them don't.
We've got some great grassroots articles there, one of whom is written by a woman associated now with Dulwich Hamlet Football Club. But she's got a great footballing tale from the past about a team that she used to be involved within the South East London area. Can I say thank you as well to Women in Football, Anna as well, the organisation hosting another fantastic event at Wembley. It's at Women in Football on Twitter. If you want to give them a follow, sign up as well, and you'll get invites to the events if you're a woman involved in football.
The Offside Rule will return next week, and we will have Hayley McQueen back from her holiday.
That's if she arrives back in one piece. I've only seen a few.
What do you mean?
Pictures. Well, I've only seen a few pictures via Facebook. She's having a very good time. Let's just see what kind of state she's in when she gets back.
Let me just say, she's sitting next to you, because I'm not having that sort of tan next to me. Bye-bye.
Yes! Oh, yes! The Offside Rule, We Get It, is brought to you by Continental Tires.